Welcome in to Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast. We are talking about the rising and scary possibility that Jason Kidd will be the Knicks' next head coach and power ranking all 22 teams in Orlando in terms of their odds to win an NBA championship. All that and more next on Locked On Knicks.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
This is all rebound, back up, off the glass, it's good! RJ brings the Knicks to the rim!
Milikina. What he does is contagious.
Robinson with a catch and slam. Across the lane, Knox foul from behind, count it, and one to Trier. Trier drives down.
Becomes infectious.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast. I'm your host, Gavin Shaw, for the first time in about 5 months, going solo on the track. Alex is, I believe, in Lake George. He's on a boat somewhere. So search the waterways of upstate New York if you want to find him. Some worrying news in Knicks world. Jason Kidd emerging as an increasingly distinct possibility as the Knicks head coach. It's hard to tell if this is merely a leverage play, but apparently the issue is Tom Thibodeau, the heavy favorite for the job, and the holdup has been his contract negotiation, and specifically, according to our friend Jonathan Macri, the length of the contract, and presumably the money that would follow from that. And this is interesting, because as many pointed out on social media, the one positive point of the James Dolan ownership group has been a willingness to spend money. And that's rarely been a holdup in the Knicks getting their guy. Most famously giving Phil Jackson $60 million to do God knows what with the team. And I didn't think it would come up here. The whole premise of committing to a brand new front office, theoretically, a bold new direction, not only in that the Knicks hired former player agent Leon Rose to run the team, but in the sense that it was the first hire in a significant amount of time that didn't come from within the organization in terms of key leadership positions. GM, president, we saw the likes of Steve Mills bandied about again and again and again. And presumably, you're doing that to create real change. And if you're going to make that kind of investment in a Leon Rose and let him hire his own guys to run the front office, at the very least for his first hire, you got to let him hire the head coach that he thinks is right. Clearly, that's Tom Thibodeau, and now who knows if that's going to happen. To some degree, I think this is the Knicks trying to get Tom to blink first. And when you talk about the leverage in this situation, it's a fascinating conversation, because the idea that Thibodeau has other options is, I don't know how true it is, and I think with COVID delaying the end of the NBA season by probably about 4 months when it's all said and done, who knows what teams will be looking and what those teams will be going for. I can't imagine the Nets hiring him. I know the idea is to appeal to Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, and for some reason I don't see those two loving Tom Thibodeau screaming ice to the point that it pierces their eardrums. I think they'd want someone a little bit more offensively focused and willing to have a star-driven system. In fact, I could potentially see Mike D'Antoni ending up there if he gets let go from Houston. And there have been reports that Daryl Morey is really into Tom Thibodeau, and obviously that would give Tibbs a far better opportunity to win now than the Knicks would, which at age 63 has to be really appealing to him and given how competitive of a guy that he is. But I think ultimately the reason he's willing to take this Knicks job is, one, it's readily available, and it's very, very hard, almost regardless of what your resume is, with a couple of exceptions, to get an NBA coaching job after you've been let go from two. It's the job that's available. And two, his relationship with Leon Rose would give him a certain level of empowerment, obviously not to the degree that he had in Minnesota when he was in charge of all personnel, but at least a say and a real voice in front office decisions that not all coaches have. And then I guess you can pivot to the worst case scenario here. What if the Knicks actually do go with Jason Kidd? We've talked about it a lot on the pod. To me, just an obvious step backwards, and not really even backwards. It's sort of staying in the same place the Knicks have been the past 20 years. He's a shortcut. He's the human embodiment of a shortcut, trying to jumpstart the process by saying, hey, we could build smart, we could draft smart for years, we could leverage our draft picks, but the single most important thing is attracting a star. And it feels weird to say that, because I think the summation, or if there's anything I'd want you guys to take away from the last 3, 4, 5, 6 pods we've done, is that there's nothing inherently wrong with the idea of structuring your franchise around attracting a superstar. The issue is you actually have to be able to do it. And if you're going to base your whole head coaching hire around it, it should be because that player is pretty much a lock if you get this head coach. And as John actually pointed out when he was on the podcast a week ago, has there ever been a star player who's gone to a team specifically because of a star? We've seen the inverse, where someone like Michael Jordan has come out and said, I'm not going to play for a team that isn't coached by Phil Jackson. But that was because he already was his coach. And I don't see a scenario where Giannis Antetokounmpo, running what's at least one of the more dominant regular season teams in NBA history, looks at the Knicks and says, that's the better basketball option for me, because this coach that I largely failed with in the aggregate, who developed me in a really impressive way as a player, depending on how much credit Giannis attributes to Jason Kidd for that, but we had zero team success with him. I want to change my life to go play for that guy. And I don't think it's realistic. I think it gets you a polite meeting with him. And I think Giannis says, hey, I like Jason Kidd. I appreciate what he did for me in terms of development. I like that he was hard on me. I'm going to go talk to him. Am I going to uproot my life and go to New York versus staying in Milwaukee or one of the 20 or so better basketball situations there are in the NBA? I just can't see that happening. I don't think it's particularly realistic. And to the people who would throw out, all right, but what if Jason Kidd is a good coach? I would throw back that he isn't. And we went into depth on this in the episode with Kane Pittman, but his inability to relate to non-star players, and perhaps even more importantly, his inability to adapt. I wouldn't go so far to say brilliant tactical innovation, but certainly a smart one in how they played in Milwaukee. High level scrambling defense, somewhat reminiscent of what the Miami Heat did during the Heatles era. And he got them to a top five defense in the NBA, which is really, really impressive when you have a pretty young team. And he did that by fully leveraging the fact that they were the longest team in all of basketball, and it wasn't particularly close. And then other teams caught on, and he never really adjusted. And then you look at what they did offensively, and the metrics were just disgusting. It was essentially everything you don't want out of the modern NBA. And in that sense, he would almost be a perfect fit with the Knicks of last year, whose personnel was everything you didn't want in the modern NBA. And to the point that some people have been joking about online, like, if you want a recipe for the Knicks to go chase Cade Cunningham or one of the other really fabulous talents in the 2021 draft, this is it. This is your tankapalooza for a year. The issue is, I don't think the Knicks want to do that. I think they want to be competitive. I think they want to win. And I don't think they would be hiring Jason Kidd just for a year. He's been known to make a power play or two. I think he would ensure that he had some level of security. To me, the biggest evidence that Jason Kidd isn't a great coach, Joe Prunty, who is universally considered not a very good coach, took over for him, and they got better. They got better with Joe Prunty than Jason Kidd. Nobody's interviewing Joe Prunty for NBA jobs. Nobody's lining up outside of Joe Prunty's door and saying, hey, you want to be our next head coach? It is just not happening. So I don't love Jason Kidd as an option. The other name we've heard is a scenario where this could lead to Mike Miller coming back, and he could be sort of the middle ground, where a lot of people in the Knicks front office have apparently expressed the same concerns that I have and many of the Knicks Twitterati have about Jason Kidd, and said, all right, you're not willing to pay Tom Thibodeau. Jason is not an option because he's not a very good coach. How about we go middle ground? We retain Mike Miller. And then I would push back. Why not Kenny Atkinson in that scenario? Because to me, I don't want to flat out say he's better than Mike Miller, because I don't think Mike Miller had a long enough leash or just period of time as head coach to say that definitively. But he has a better track record just because he has had a couple of years on Miller. Miller, to be clear, did about as good as he could have in a pretty bad situation. And I'd honestly be fine if he came back as head coach. At this point, and maybe in some underlying PR level, which always seems to be the Knicks' end game in all these, how can we not look like idiots? And they always seem to fail at that. Part of their end game might be, you're going to be happy about Tom Thibodeau now that we threw Jason Kidd's name out there. And if that's the plan, congratulations, James Dolan. Congratulations, Knicks PR. It worked. I would be happy with Tom Thibodeau at this point after just hearing the name Jason Kidd. I'm a little confused why Kenny Atkinson isn't more of a candidate and why he isn't clearly a better option than Kidd, but I am not the New York Knicks. All right, we'll be back in just a second, but I wanted to take a minute to tell you about one of my favorite sponsors of this podcast, and that is rockauto.com. Chain stores have different price tiers for professional mechanics and do-it-yourselfers. RockAuto.com's prices are the same for everybody. And that wouldn't really matter if they were high, but they're reliably low. RockAuto.com always offers the lowest prices possible rather than changing prices based on what the market bears out like airlines do. RockAuto.com is for everybody and does not require a membership or account login. RockAuto.com is a family business serving auto part customers online for 20 years. Go to RockAuto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. They have everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Who doesn't need new carpet? Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. The rockauto.com catalog is unique and remarkably easy to navigate. Quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and choose the brand, specifications, and prices you prefer. Go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write Locked On. This is the important part, guys. This is how you keep the podcast going forever. Write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com. All right, we are going to wrap this one up by power ranking every NBA team in Orlando in terms of their odds, in my mind, to win the NBA championship. I just feel like we've done a lot of bubble talk in terms of health and safety. We've done very little talk about the actual basketball, and I like to take these solo episodes to sort of bounce around the league. Number 22, the Brooklyn Nets. Just a shell of a team. They've, outside of Caris LeVert and Joe Harris, and you can make a case for Jared Allen, they've lost pretty much every meaningful body on that roster. I hope Jamal Crawford just gets a farewell game in Orlando where he gets to throw up 40 shots. 21, the Washington Wizards. No Bradley Beal, no John Wall, no Davis Bertans, and most important, no Garrison Matthews. That guy is the truth. He will not be in Orlando. The other all-stars slash one of the five best shooters in the league will not be in Orlando, so the Wizards will not be very good. Number 20, the Orlando Magic, probably the most boring team in the league without Jonathan Isaac. Outside of, I kind of like watching Markelle Fultz. I'm rooting for him. Not a lot going on there. Number 19, the San Antonio Spurs, also well within that conversation. No LaMarcus Aldridge. I think it just translates to them not being very competitive. I still don't totally know what's going on in San Antonio. Number 18, your Phoenix Suns, my co-favorite team, along with, of course, the Knicks. They looked good the other day. I watched about 40 minutes of their game against the Jazz, which is way too much for any of these scrimmage games. But I love that basketball is back. I actually think Phoenix has, they botched their future in a number of ways, taking DeAndre Ayton over Luka Doncic, maybe prematurely getting rid of guys like Josh Jackson and Marquese Chris, definitely prematurely getting rid of D'Anthony Melton last offseason, but I think a good base with Booker and Ayton and Mikal Bridges, a really sneakily good player. He's going to be a high-level role player, I think, for the next 10-plus years in the NBA. They can upset a few teams, and I just think the combined star power of Booker and Ayton gives them a slightly better chance, but they will not be winning an NBA title this year. The Sacramento Kings, intriguing, I thought, because I think their schedule is relatively easy. They might have a chance to make a run at the playoffs, but I've lost faith a little bit. With Bagley being out, I don't think there's quite enough frontline talent there. Though I'm excited for Buddy Hield to drop 40 on someone. The Memphis Grizzlies, the arguably the best story in all of basketball this year, along with the Raptors, a team that was widely panned to finish near the bottom of the Western Conference. They're in pole position. Overwhelming favorites to get into that playoff game, play-in game, 3.5 game lead on anyone else. I have a feeling they're going to lose. They're going to lose back-to-backs in the play-in game to one of the two teams I have ahead of them. 15 quick interlude, the Indiana Pacers. I had them up at 12, and then I read on Twitter about 10 minutes before the start of this pod, Domantas Sabonis had a foot injury that was pretty severe. He left Orlando. So to me, that takes away some of their upside. I actually liked Indiana as maybe not a finals contender, but a super dark horse team to reach the Eastern Conference Championship. They're low-key pretty loaded with talent. You look up and down that starting lineup. Aaron Holiday, really, really underrated player. He's solid. Victor Oladipo looked like he was reaching full strength. Seems like he's going to play in Orlando. Had 27 points in 29 minutes the game before the season shut down. And you group him with TJ Warren, who's been a consistent 20-point scorer, dramatically improved defensively, probably the most improved defensive player in the entire NBA. Sabonis, 18, 12, and 5, one of six players in NBA history to average that for a season. And then Miles Turner, who's sort of the, I think, gets underrated in the conversation for what you want out of a modern center, a guy who's a genuine rim protector and a genuine floor stretcher at the other end, sort of Jaren Jackson light in those two respects. I like Indiana quite a bit. Their depth is really good. Shout out to Dougie McBuckets, who, when he was on the Knicks, I thought was probably on his way out of the NBA, has turned himself into a legit bench player. They have a good future. They're going to be really good down the road. Without Sabonis, they're not doing anything this year. 14-13. This was a real, and even 12. This was a real debate in my mind. I had in order the Blazers, the Pelicans, and the Jazz. My logic was as follows. For Portland, there are a lot of people who have them as a dark horse title contender. I heard Chris Haynes on Bill Simmons' podcast talk about a theory where he thought they could potentially win an NBA title. He didn't say it was likely, but he thought they should be viewed as legit contenders. And I don't buy into them that much. Last year's team was good, but they sort of fluked their way into the conference finals and had a pretty easy path to get there. They beat a pretty good Oklahoma City team in the first round. Denver, who wasn't, I think, was overrated last year and is overrated this year. They knocked them off. And then Golden State, without KD, didn't have too much trouble with them sweeping them. They're good, and they're fully healthy, but I still don't know how well all their pieces align. I think Melo is just going to get ruthlessly targeted in any playoff series. I just think they're probably a little bit less than the sum of their parts. The Pelicans, on the other hand, are really, really interesting, and I might even have them 2-3 spots higher if not for Zion Williamson leaving and his comeback being sort of unsure, because I think depending on the circumstances of what he does when he's gone, he could be quarantined for up to 10 days when he comes back. And if that means he misses 4 games, I mean, that's pretty much the end of New Orleans season. But with him in the lineup, the 8th best offense in the NBA, the 11th best defense in the NBA, that's the profile of a borderline conference championship team, depending on matchups. And to me, at least, the best young core in all of basketball. I think we talked about that with Marcus Barahal back on our future power rankings episode. I just love, I think if there's one team I'd recommend for those of you listening who mostly just watch the Knicks, adopting in Orlando, it would be the Pelicans. The combo of Lonzo throwing full court lobs, J.J. Redick at age 36 sprinting off screens and banging threes, Jrue Holiday, incredible defender, Brandon Ingram turned himself into one of the better ISO scorers in the NBA. Just a lot of fun dynamics at play with that group. All the role players are really, really good. And the Jazz, I was, especially with Bogdanovich hurt, I was a little torn on putting them ahead of those two teams, but I just think because of their seeding advantage, they're inherently a little more competitive. And the Donovan Mitchell-Rudy Gobert pairing is pretty powerful, even if they hate each other. At 11, the Oklahoma City Thunder, Dennis Schroeder, Chris Paul, and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, the best three-man combo in the entire NBA in terms of their collective net rating. Just an incredible throwback season from Paul. Schroeder, really, really good. He's playing far and away the best defense of his career. My vote for sixth man of the year, Gilgeous-Alexander, one of the best young guards in the NBA. Our guy, Danilo Gallinari, former and future Knick, I hope, has been killer this season. Steven Adams, a kindly badass, but zero perimeter talent to speak of. And as well as they've played, and they were playing about as well as any team in the NBA when the hiatus hit, I think they're going to get exposed at those forward spots. So excited to see Andre Roberson play for the first time in 2 years. Hope he's developed a jumper in that time. Number 10, the Nuggets. This is all about Bol Bol. And the kid killed at 16 points, 10 rebounds, 6 blocks in his first game. I wish the Knicks had found a way to draft him. The dude is an absolute beast, coordinated, 7'2". Honestly, reminds me of he who shall not be named, Snake Porzingis a little bit. I don't believe that, but I feel like I'm obliged to say it. Yeah, he reminds me of the Unicornette a little too, as well, with his ability to protect the rim on one end and then just dribble up and bang threes on the other. But no, he probably won't play a significant role. If Michael Porter Jr. is back and operating at full strength, I think he gives them a little upside, but I think that team is zero ceiling. Like, I just can't see them being very competitive against the Clippers or Lakers or even the Rockets, I think, would probably have their way with the Nuggets. Number 9, the Miami Heat. I'm a big Duncan Robinson stan, so I love them for that reason. I just think they're good on both ends. Jimmy Butler, Bam Adebayo cover up for a lot of deficiencies defensively, or at least weak points across their roster. Those two guys are probably worthy of being on some All-NBA defensive team. They're both really, really good. Just great passing, great shooting, fun team. Just sort of the Nuggets East in the sense that I don't think there's much of a ceiling to speak of there, except in the fact that Adebayo gives them a pretty good matchup against the Bucks, and that would intrigue me in the second round. Number 7, the Houston Rockets, and this is the next two teams are really, oh, you know, I totally skipped over the Dallas Mavericks. I'll say the next three teams are ceiling picks. I genuinely believe the Mavericks can beat any team on any given night. I don't think they're quite ready to string that together over four series, but the combination of a Luka Doncic and shooting is incredibly powerful, and to that point, they have the single best offense in the NBA, not just this year, but in the history of the sport. They are the Mitchell Robinson of teams in that respect. Doncic is about as good of an offensive engine as you have in the league. I would put him up there with LeBron, Harden, and I think there's a case he's better than Giannis. Lillard's also in that conversation, but one of the five best pure offensive players in all of basketball. Actually, Trae Young might be in that mix. That would be an interesting ranking, and like maybe we'll do an episode on that in the future, just going through the best offensive players in basketball, which obviously is a heavy correlation with the best overall players in basketball. But yeah, they're really, really good. I love Seth Curry. I think no Dwight Powell hurts them quite a bit. I know he got hurt well before the start of the hiatus, but they need some kind of rim runner, and Willie Cauley-Stein decided not to go to Orlando, and I think that'll affect their offense a little bit. Number 7, the Rockets. Number 6, the Sixers. Same stories. Different conference, high ceilings, low floor. Philly's 29-2 at home, abysmal on the road. Houston looked like the best team in basketball when they sort of shocked the world after going fully small, not playing a guy over 6'7". And then, lo and behold, the New York Knicks beat them. They lose their mojo, and they finish the pre-coronavirus part of the season not very good overall. I think they lost 4 of their last 5 heading into the break. A little worried about Russ coming back from COVID. Obviously, I mean, the initial returns, and this has been really encouraging for me, on guys who were sick and then have played in Orlando have been good. They mostly all look like themselves, which is really exciting because I thought we definitely have a case where a guy would come back and just not be anything close to ready to play. And maybe we just have yet to see that person. But yeah, that's encouraging for them. And I think James Harden can win a series by himself. The one thing with the Rockets, and I'm not sure if I've talked about this on the podcast, is they should have never traded Chris Paul for Russell Westbrook. You keep Chris Paul on that team, I genuinely believe they have as good of a chance as any team in the league to win an NBA title. And obviously, Russ has been really, really good of late, was arguably one of the 10 to 15 best players in the league. Once they went small, was absolutely dominant, unguardable offensively. I think they're sacrificing some of the power of having 5 shooters out there at the same time, which they obviously lose with Russell Westbrook in there instead of Chris Paul. I just don't buy that small ball is a way to win 4 series in a row. I did initially, but then they fell off. Number 5, your Boston Celtics. They would be higher. They would be 4 if Kemba Walker was 100% healthy, but he's not. I buy into the idea that Jason Tatum has turn the corner into genuine superstar them. Probably top 10 to 12 guy in the league right now. There are very few dudes on the perimeter I would rather have than him. Gordon Hayward, I think the time off will do him well. I think he'll return to his early season form. Jaylen Brown is a beast. But again, with no Kemba, with a limited Kemba, I kind of question the depth there a little bit. Number 4, Toronto, the single best story in the NBA, the league's second best defense, just stacked up and down the board. You could really make a case for 4 or 5 guys on that team being all defense caliber, incredibly balanced attack, and perhaps the best thing you can say about them, finished with a top 4 record in the NBA despite largely not having their whole roster throughout the season and at various points missing 3 or even 4 starters and still being really, really good. So I'm excited to see what they look like. I think from Nick Nurse, this was one of the more miraculous coaching jobs in the modern NBA. I'd be interested to see what would happen in the second round if they played Philly or Boston, whether the high-end talent that both those teams have. With Philly, you can even make a case that between Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid, they would have the top 2 players on the court. And I think a lot of people tend to forget, even with Kawhi last year, if Embiid had been healthy throughout that whole series, Philly probably wins going away. They were generally dominant when Embiid was on the floor. All right, top 3, you can make an argument to me for any of these 3 teams in any order, and I would buy it. I went back and forth a few different times. I had Milwaukee at number 1 at points, and I have them at number 3 now. Statistically, they are far and away the best team in the NBA. Historically, they're one of the 10 greatest regular season teams of all time. With Giannis on the floor, they were plus 16 per 100 possessions. That's a mark you almost never, ever see, regardless of sample size, regardless of which player from which era you want to isolate. It rarely, rarely happens that one guy who plays 30-plus minutes a game makes that much of a difference. And the thing with Giannis is they were playing him 30 minutes a night during the regular season. You're going to be getting that up to 36 to 38 in the playoffs. The issue is with how intensely he plays, and we saw this last year against Toronto, he's not going to play 44 minutes, or maybe in a closeout game, but he's not going to play 44 minutes a game for a whole series. And I think that caps their ceiling a little bit. I do think teams are going to be able to blitz him a tiny bit when he's off the floor. And I know they're so good defensively still that generally they'll be able to keep it close even against teams like the Lakers and Clippers. But I'm interested to see Chris Middleton, who statistically was a superstar this year, how much that translates to really high-level games. And in the past, he's been excellent in the playoffs. But the question is, can he do it in the finals or conference finals? And can guys like Eric Bledsoe, who have faltered in the past in the playoffs, step up and produce the same results they did in the regular season. The Lakers and Clippers, I just have a little more faith in, because you're talking about two teams, and the Lakers, arguably two of the five best players in the league, the Clippers, two of the 12 or so best players in the league, including Kawhi, who, again, a guy you could say is maybe the single best playoff weapon in all of basketball, with his ability to be an absolutely dominant defender on one end, and I'll say it, a Jordan-esque scorer in the other, with his ability to score in the mid-range and hit the type of shots that playoff defenses give you time after time after time. I have the Clippers in one and the Lakers at two. I would have had the Lakers at one with their full roster intact. I'm not a big Rajon Rondo fan. I think Avery Bradley is good, but not great. The issue, as many have pointed out, is you keep, every time you go down one spot, it's not just the guy who replaces Rondo, in this case Alex Caruso, is actually better than him. It's the guy who has to replace Caruso. If Quinn Cook is playing significant minutes against a team like the Clippers or the Bucks, that could be enough to swing a series. And I was tempted to still put the Lakers at one, because I think people underrate the sheer advantage that having LeBron and Anthony Davis for 38 minutes a night give you, especially in a playoff series. Those are, I'm trying to think if there's anyone else in the NBA I'd rather have for a single game than LeBron or AD. Kawhi's in the mix, obviously. Giannis is in the mix. You can make a case for Luka. You can make a case for James Harden. You can make a case for Steph. But those two, with what they bring on both ends, it's going to be hard to beat the Lakers. But the Clippers' combination of different wings they can throw at LeBron, between Kawhi, between Paul George, even Marcus Morris. They just have a lot of bodies, and then they have a lot of bigs to throw at AD. So I just think the Clippers are the most well-rounded team. They're relatively healthy going into this, though I think Lou Williams was out partying last night, so who knows. The Clippers are my favorite as we resume NBA basketball. All right, everyone have a great weekend. We're gonna have a great guest on next week. Usually I try to leave it vague and surprise people once we drop the episode, but I'll just throw it out ahead of time, because we have him locked in, and I'm really excited about it. Nate Duncan, one of the longtime, I would argue, smarter basketball analysts of anyone out there. He has a really, really in-depth view on the game. I think there's maybe 10 people who work in media who watch as much film as he does. Host of the Dunked On podcast, host of Hollinger and Duncan, also part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Really, really excited to get to talk to him. We have another guest book, and all will be revealed next week. So until then, have a great weekend, and we'll be back next week with some real NBA basketball. It'll be good. Talk to you later.